But now that you left me, good Lord, how I cry. You don't miss your wall, you don't miss your wall, till your well run dry.
A big welcome to winter. The West, Midwest, and Eastern United States have gotten their first visit by Old Man Winter, and it looks as if he's going to stay a while. We'll talk about the wintry wallop that some areas received recently, and we'll look on the flip side of that coin. How are other areas of the country doing in terms of drought? That's coming up on Jet Streaming.
I want my water. I need my water. I love my water. And I want my water.
Glad you're with us again this week for Minnesota Public Radio's Jet Streaming Weather and Climatology Podcast. I'm Kathy Werzer, along with Weather Wizards, Paul Huttner, and Grandpa Mark Seely.
Oh, yes. Yes, indeed. I'm enjoying being a grandpa. I apologize for my voice. My throat's a little dry today.
Oh, I know. People have had this crud go around. How are you feeling over there?
Doing great. Congratulations to Mark for being a granddaddy, and I'm enjoying the snow.
Well, we'll talk about that later.
We'll talk.
Yeah, we'll talk about that, about the snow and this incredible storm in Oregon and Washington State in just a few minutes. But first, I want to focus on those areas of the country that have been so dry this summer and fall, because I think those folks have kind of fallen off the radar in terms of attention. In the past, we've always gotten a good read on drought conditions from Brad Rippey. He's a meteorologist with the USDA, and Brad is joining us again. Hello, Brad. How are you doing?
Good morning. We're waiting for our first snow, perhaps tomorrow here in Washington.
Okay, we'll keep our fingers crossed for you. When you look at your maps, Brad, where are the areas most hurting for moisture right now?
We've been talking about this for months, but it's still the southeastern United States, from Alabama to the Carolinas. And, of course, a lot of the West, even though we've heard all these big storms lately in the northwest, the southwest, we still have a big percentage of the drought of the West covered in drought at this point.
Brad, I can't help but ask this question. A few weeks ago, Georgia Governor Sonny Perdue drew some headlines because he hosted a prayer service for rain. Do you know if that did any good?
At this point, apparently not. Now, they did get some rain right after that service, but if you look at Georgia right now, that's one of the hardest hit states. Continue to see a lot of water supply problems for Atlanta, and much of North Georgia remains in a drought that you could expect only one every 50 to 100 years. And even in the agricultural sector, Georgia pastures have just not shown any recovery at all. The current numbers out of Georgia showing the range in pasture in that state, 69% very poor to poor.
Mm. Brad, you talked about agricultural drought a little bit. Tell us, what is the difference between agricultural and hydrological drought, and which one can have greater effects?
Well, agricultural drought usually works on a very short scale. And I should have mentioned this at the beginning, but one thing we've seen this fall is a drying trend, Texas up to Kansas, and that has created some problems for the winter wheat crop. That's a short-term dryness on top of wetness earlier in the year. Now, the longer term, the hydrologic drought, that's when you get the soil drying out throughout the entire profile, and you start to affect river levels, lake levels, water supplies become an issue. So it's really a long-term versus short-term issue, agricultural being the short-term.
You know, we've been talking about the southeast part of the country, and you mentioned Texas up to Kansas. But I'm wondering about the folks in the California area. How dry are they? Have they recovered from their dry spell earlier in the year?
There is still a portion of California, including the key watershed areas of the Sierra Nevada, that have received virtually no precipitation so far this fall. This comes on the heels of a very dry year last year. So for California, the water supply concerns continue. Snowpacks in the Sierra Nevada are very, very low. And in fact, going back to October 1st and looking at the water year to date, we've only seen 20 to 50% of normal precipitation in the Sierra Nevada. Now, the storm last weekend did clip Southern California. That's not a water supply area, but that will help with the wildfire situation for the extreme southern tier of the state.
And, Brad, back to the southeast, I know you monitor a lot of the hydrologic data rather routinely, but I'm wondering, in your assessment, are the water restrictions and water conservation measures that have come into play there Do you think they're having much effect?
They do make a difference. We have seen the western United States become very aware of water restrictions and controlling water use over the last several years. Everything from the lower flow shower heads to the lower flush toilet, the smaller amount. And that does make a difference. It's just one person, it doesn't make a difference. But when you multiply that by several million, that can make a huge difference on water supply. The West learned that a long time ago. Unfortunately, some of the other parts of the country have only begun to learn that lesson.
So that's what's going on in the Southeast right now, is they're maybe learning how much they can save down there?
That's correct. I mean, you have some big population centers in the Southeast and on up and down the Eastern Seaboard. These areas aren't accustomed to multi-year droughts like the West has become used to over the years. But back from the late 90s to the early part of this decade, there was about a four-year drought in the Southeast. And some people speculate that the rapid descent into very terrible conditions this summer, it was aggravated by the fact that we've seen places like Columbia, South Carolina, they racked up a 60-plus inch rainfall deficit in 4 years from 98 to 2002. Never really totally recovered from that, and groundwater supplies were probably a little short when we came into the summer. It turned dry again, and then things got bad really quick.
Speaking of groundwater, Brad, I saw one town in Tennessee ran out of water. I'm curious about aquifers. Can you just find another deeper aquifer, or how many aquifers are there in most places, and how deep down into the earth could we expect to find water?
Well, this is really poorly understood. We have, of course, in the nation's midsection, there's a major aquifer that runs from roughly Nebraska down into Texas. And tracers on that water indicate that some of that water has been deposited there for thousands of years, on the order of 7,000-8,000 years. And it's just now being tapped in the last century since that area has been settled. It's very poorly understood. There's been tracers put in water in Idaho in the Lost River Basin, and it seems like 30 to 50 years for that water to work its way through the system. So this is, even by today's science, it's poorly understood how the water gets from the sky to the aquifer below. And we've got a lot of learning to do, and some locations can go deeper for water. Others may not have it so lucky, and we're going to face a lot more of this as we, with population increases, increased water demand, and perhaps more drought in the future ahead of us. We're going to see a lot more of this in the news.
And, of course, we'll continue to follow it with you. We really appreciate your time here, Brad. Thank you.
No problem. Thank you.
That's Brad Rippey. He's with the USDA. Now, when it comes to moisture, there are areas of the country getting a whole lot of it. Mark and Paul, what do you think of what's happening in Washington State and Oregon right now?
Well, it appears to me, Kathy, we may be getting into a more active pattern across the upper U.S., and December may bring more of these. That's at least I'm seeing it as a sign of maybe change into a more active weather pattern. I don't know about you, Paul. Are you seeing the signs for that, too? Or?
Yeah, I am. The jet stream is setting up through that northern tier of the United States. And one of the interesting things about the Pacific Northwest and the intensity of these storms, there's nothing to stop that momentum from coming in off the Pacific Ocean, and then it rams into the mountain range right there. It's an ideal setup for these heavy rain and snow events, and they get a lot of wind with that as well.
Well, those folks are used to rain. But even, yeah, you know, if you some of the video we've seen coming out of those areas, boy, your heart really goes out to those folks. Well, in the Midwest, though, folks are dealing with snow. The snow is courtesy of that system that has drenched the Northwest, and the snow is on top of a dandy storm that dropped 20 inches of snow on Grand Marais, Minnesota, near the tip of the state.
And one guy who's had the chance to watch the storm close up is Mike Stewart. He's the head of the National Weather Service office in Duluth. Mike, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you for asking me.
Listen, I saw 20 inches up in Grand Marais, 14 in Duluth. Those totals at least 3 to 6 inches higher than some of the inland areas. How much of these totals do you attribute to system snow versus lake enhancement versus orographic lift on the rise up from Lake Superior? And how do you quantify and account for each of those when forecasting a storm on the North Shore?
Well, it is the higher amounts were caused mostly by orographic. For example, where I live in Duluth, I live about halfway down the hill. I picked up about 13 inches of snow, while up by the airport, we picked up about 11 inches of snow. So it was orographic. And what we normally do, we try to bump up the amounts forecasted of snow along the North Shore, maybe by 2 to 3 inches, depending on how the wind is blowing off the lake and how the wind flow is. And it's not unusual to have 2, 3, 4 inches more of snow along the North Shore than right along the North Shore than inland.
Are we talking right on the shore, Mike, or in those higher terrains along the shore?
It's usually along the higher terrain along the North Shore. When we pick up the heavier amounts right along the North Shore, that's lake effect, which we are getting right now here on Tuesday. We're getting some lake snow bands. But the higher amounts like Isabella or Lutzen or some of those areas, that's usually terrain enhanced.
Say, Mike, prior to the big storm last weekend, had some of the ski areas along the North Shore been making snow? Had they already established any kind of a base?
Yes, they have established a base. We've been pretty nice to them and given them some pretty cold weather, so they've been able to make some snow. I know here at Spirit Mountain, they've been able to make at least one to one and a half foot of snow from what I've been hearing. And this snow on top of it, we talked to somebody at Lutzen, and they were just ecstatic that they were getting nature snow.
You know, I tip my hat to the forecasters because you hit it on the head that there was snow coming. It's just that that snow line moved, kind of jiggled a little bit.
Yes, it did. In forecasting snow mounts, especially of a winter storm of this variety, it's always hard to exactly nail where the heaviest amounts are. That's when we make our forecast, at least try to give an impression. In this case here, we were going 10 to 16, 12 to 18 inches along the North Shore, and in most cases, we pretty much got that. At least it gives the public an idea that this is not going to be like your typical 2, 3, 4 inches of snow. This is going to be a foot of snow, which is going to cause some problems.
One of the interesting things I know that we do when we forecast snow amounts is we give a range. And one of the reasons, there's a couple reasons we give ranges. One of them is because in any given geographic area, you're going to get a wide variety of snowfall amounts, usually several inches. The other reason is the state of the science really doesn't allow us to forecast that specifically down to the inch. Is that kind of the approach you guys take in Duluth as well, Mike?
Yes, that's the approach we take because it depends if we get any heavy snow bands coming across a certain area, and that could give you a couple extra inches than an area that may be 5 miles to the east. So that's why we do give a range, so at least the public is aware of at least what range of snow that we're looking at. If we go 3 to 5 inches, you would expect somewhere between that amount, so you can say, okay, I'll get maybe 4 or 5 inches or so.
But do you find that sometimes folks look at the high end of that and say, oh, sure, they said 6 inches, three fell. Uh-huh.
Yes. Some of my neighbors were saying, hey, we're supposed to get 16 inches. We only got 12 or 13. Well, in my opinion, 12 or 13 is a lot of snow. You know, we may not have gotten to 16. But, yes, people key on the higher amounts because it sounds better.
I agree with Kathy, Mike. Your staff did a great job handling that storm. I wondered, what's your perception of the citizens up there? Do you think they were ready for it, and was the snow well received? I know a lot of people were waiting to do some winter recreation.
Yes, thank you for the compliment. My staff has talked to their neighbors, and I talked to my neighbors. Everybody was very happy with the forecast. it looks like we nailed it pretty good. People were prepared for it. Also, people were ecstatic because of the cold weather. They've been freezing over the lakes. And now with this foot and a half of snow across the area, they can go snowmobiling, skiing. People are just, I mean, this is a very well-received snowstorm because last year we got very little snow at all in December. So this year everybody was ecstatic.
I remember folks being a little dismayed at that kind of brownish, kind of maybe just a crusty, icky coating on the ground there by Christmas of last year. So it's nice to have a fresh blanket.
Oh, it's great. Everybody's saying it. Great. Now we're going to have a white Christmas. So that's what I was hearing.
Well, we wish you the best. Thanks for joining us, Mike.
Thank you very much.
That's Mike Stewart with the National Weather Service office in Duluth, Minnesota. I'm feeling kind of Christmassy.
Yeah, the snow got me in the mood.
I admit, you know, I don't like the cold and the snow that much.
Right.
But, you know, it is kind of nice that first snowfall.
It is. It's beautiful to look at, not so good to drive in.
That is true. Let's chat, because of the snow, let's chat about appropriate gifts for the weather geek in your life. Let's start with Mark over there.
Okay.
I was going to try to make a tie between geek and Mark. And I thought, nah, we won't do that. Anyway, If you had somebody you were shopping for, what would you suggest in terms of maybe a couple of books or something like that?
Well, we've talked about this in the past, Kathy, but I'm a big fan of the Cloud Appreciation Society, and their second volume is out for the Christmas season called Hot Pink Flying Saucers. Now, there's a title for you.
Hot Pink Flying
Hot
Saucers.
But it's available in all bookstores, or you can order it online through Amazon, and it's a very... very good book from the standpoint of giving you these very intriguing images of cloud forms.
I presume and that so, a hot pink flying saucer is a cloud, eh?
Yes, a lenticular cloud, a standing wave cloud, and with just the right kind of light shining on it, it looks like a hot pink flying saucer.
All right.
And another book that we've talked about that I think would be a good read for anybody would be Kerry Emanuel's Divine Wind, the history
yes.
and science of hurricanes. A lot of people are infatuated with hurricanes, and it's probably, arguably, the best book out on hurricanes.
Now, I noticed that the Weather Channel's professional weather station is available. This is the WS-2310 TWC, by the way. It has a thermosensor, a rain and wind gauge, a radio time and date indicator with barometric pressure, an indoor-outdoor temperature and humidity indicator. This thing also reports wind speed and direction, wind chill, barometric pressure, dew point, and has a marvelous forecaster with a storm warning alarm.
My goodness.
The heck?
Cool.
It's $141, so the gift is a little pricey, but for your beloved weather geek on whatever list you have, I think it'd be just a lovely gift to give them. Hunter wants one of those, I
yes,
think.
Yes, I do. It'll help outfit the weather lab. Here's a great book. It's called The Snowflake by Kenneth Librecht of Caltech. He's a North Dakota native, and it's a beautiful book. It's stunning, first of all, as a coffee table book. But what is really cool about it, the microscopic pictures, photos of snowflakes taken, and the wide variety of all of these things that we call snowflakes, from stellar dendrites to hexagonal plates to needles and bullets. There are all these subcategories, and they're all categorized in the book. So it's a great resource for the snow lover in addition to being just a beautiful book.
I wonder, how in the world did they take those photos?
They, from what I understand, they collected snowflakes, and some of them they created, and then in a freezing environment, in the deep freeze, and photographed them. There. So it's phenomenal to see.
I'd like to talk to the photographer who did that.
She is a woman from Wisconsin, so we got us bracketed here, North Dakota and Wisconsin.
We should talk to them sometime.
That'd be fun.
That'd
How
be
they
a great
do
interview.
Yeah.
So good suggestions. And of course, you know, in the next couple of weeks before the holidays, we'll pass along some of their suggestions, their gift ideas on Jet Streaming. Well, shall we pass along a weather website of the week? Yes. Let us do that.
We should. And we talked to Brad Rippey from the Drought Monitor. And that's a great site to keep track of these drought areas around the country. It's called the U.S. Drought Monitor. So you can find that easily in any search engine. drought.unl.edu/dm/monitor.html, the U.S. Drought Monitor.
Very good. We covered a lot of ground today, you two.
We did.
We sure did.
And poor Dr. Seeley with his low, gravelly voice. You held up well. Good job.
Well, thanks. I had a full cup of water. That helped out. Talking about drought.
Sounded like Barry White over there.
Yeah, there you go. Kind of low and sexy. Thank you to you, too, by the way. We'll see you next week, okay?
Thanks, Kathy.
And thanks as well to some people who've taken the time to write to us with ideas and comments. Scott and Amber, nice to hear from you. And thanks to Chris as well. We are online at minnesotapublicradio.org. Click on Jet Streaming. Check us out anytime, and also do leave a message. We really like to hear from you. Until next week, remember to keep your eyes on the sky.